good afternoon and good evening to some of the people joining us from Europe. This is Dave Brock, your host at probably one of what I think is going to be one of the most exciting discussions I've participated in here at the Sales Guru site and roundtable. We've called it the yin and yang of buying and what buyers really want. And how should salespeople respond to that? Again, my name is Dave Brock. I'm president of Partners in Excellence. Before I get into introducing our really special, my special guest on this and get into the meat of the program, just a couple of housekeeping things here. And I ask you to indulge me while I read this script because, I'm just bad at this stuff, but, you know, I'd like to let each of you know about this event being streamed online inside the Sales Guru community. The Sales Guru community is for sales leaders interested in exchanging ideas on how to grow a world-class sales team. In the event app, participants can ask and vote up questions that they'd like us to answer and respond to. You can also chat through this, and both Chris and I will be monitoring both the questions and the chat. We already have just a huge list of questions being generated already, so it's quite exciting. So thank each of you for joining us. What I'd like to do is, you know, in kind of his introductory comments is, I've participated in a lot of these sessions in the past, and we always talk about the buyer and the changing buyer and so on. And most of the time, these roundtables are about a bunch of us sales and marketing people pontificating about the buyer and the new buying process and what buyers need and so on. And, you know, I decided to really go to the dark side in this roundtable, and I said, you know, why don't we get an actual buyer, you know, one of those people that most of us salespeople just despise and do everything that we can to avoid. Why don't we actually go after somebody who works in procurement and sourcing and whose sole job is to hammer us on price? And I kind of looked all around and I saw this guy that was participating oddly in a whole bunch of sales discussion communities, Chris Locke. And Chris has become just a terrific friend and has a real perspective. And so it really is a privilege to introduce Chris and have him become part of this community and lead this discussion. Chris, you want to, you know, I feel like putting kind of a cross and a stick of garlic up because it is really, you know, talking to somebody like you for me is really the dark side. So you want to defend yourself and introduce yourself?
Dave, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not, but thank you for the introduction. I am honored to be, and I understand the sentiment, and absolutely, I am honored to be part of this very unique webinar. I think it's long overdue that buyers and sellers get together in this type of forum and discuss what we're thinking and try to find out what the other guy is thinking and see if somehow we can collectively improve opportunities on both ends.
Good. And tell us a little bit about your background so we can kind of have you calibrated.
Yeah, I'll go through this quickly because we want to get to the discussions and the questions. But in a nutshell, I've been employed in the industrial environment for the past 35 years. I've been in engineering, in project management, and of course now global procurement. Currently, I'm still a senior buyer for a global power systems company. We're actually a competitor with Caterpillar. But prior to my position here, I was a senior buyer also at American Axle Manufacturing in Detroit. Before that, for 9 years, I was one of the two global lead buyers in the U.S. in powertrain purchasing at Daimler Chrysler Corporation. And that was during their merger with Mercedes. And I was also commercially responsible for the Hemi engine programs. Now, during my time as a buyer, I have purchased billions of dollars worth of diverse products and services from complex powertrain assembly systems, construction, production parts, I even bought office supplies for a while. And of course, during that time, it was my pleasure to work with thousands of sales professionals and I have been the recipient of thousands of sales strategies. So that puts me in a very unique position to observe and to be able to comment on the strategies that are used by the supply base. In addition, I've also communicated out of curiosity with hundreds of other buyers from across the nation and sort of compared notes as to what buyers prefer suppliers do and what sales professionals need to rethink.
So you guys are plotting against us secretly.
No,
right?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not the dark side. But the reason I'm doing this is, and I don't want this to come off to sound the wrong way, but I really think that sales is a very noble profession. Because even in our personal lives, we are constantly surrounded by the influence of successful sales professionals. Look around the room, the area that you're in, look at absolutely everything. It's there because of the sales process. All the products and services that make up our cities, our neighborhoods, our businesses. And as a professional buyer, it's been my goal for the past 10 years to improve our relationship between buyers and sellers. For 4 years, while I worked at Chrysler, I developed and facilitated, along with another buyer, a sales seminar, a workshop. It was called Buyer Door Sales Training, and it allowed suppliers a chance to, if you can imagine, mentally sit behind our desk and see the entire sales process through the eyes of buyers, through the eyes of the people that buy from you. I'm currently
awesome.
I'm also currently writing several articles a week, especially for sales professionals like you. It's a free internet blog, and it's on thebuyersdesk.com. Thebuyersdesk.com. It offers free observations, feedback, insight, really sales advice from the buyer side of the desk.
Super, super. Well, thanks, Chris. I mean, it really is a privilege to be able to say, to have you kind of give us, some guidance about how we work most effectively with procurement and sourcing professionals and how we, create, it sounds a little bit trite, but the proverbial win-win situations all around. And I guess I'd like to really start is a lot of times when I've faced professional procurement and sourcing organizations, or I see salespeople doing it, there's a lot of anxiety around it. And we don't know how guys like you work. We don't know what you expect and how we most effectively connect with you. So maybe we could start with that.
Sure.
When a salesperson comes into your office or tries to meet with you, what are your expectations and what should we be doing to really most effectively connect with you and start building that relationship and building our case?
That's a huge question, and we could spend the entire webinar on that. Let me start by saying, I can kind of tie this into one of the top questions on the site that says, what are the biggest mistakes salespeople make when working with procurement? I've talked about this with a lot of buyers, and it's come to our conclusion that the biggest mistake salespeople can make when they're trying to connect with purchasing is that when they're sitting with the initial sales meeting, they are using the same generic sales presentation and approach on the buyers that they use on everyone else. In other words, they're using the same sales presentation, whether it's a PowerPoint or whatever it is, on the buyer, the same one on the engineer, the same one on the eventual end user, the same one on the designer. And really, the reason that's a mistake is because there's going to be something in your presentation that's going to bore me as a buyer, or I'm not going to understand what it is you're talking about, because maybe I'm not as technically capable in the products that I need to be. So think about when you're presenting to anyone, think about that person, think about what their job title is. And think about, based on their job title, what are their roles and responsibilities? In fact, you may want to even find out ahead of time so that you can create a presentation that suits what they want and need to hear.
So, Chris, let me interrupt there and just kind of start probing that a little bit. And I'll, it is kind of almost sales 101 that, you know, what we have to, you know, we can't do our standard canned pitches. We have to understand what the customer, the person that we're meeting with, really is concerned about and tune our entire conversation to what a customer is concerned about. So you're probably less concerned about the technology, the features, functions, feeds, speeds, or whatever it is that we're trying to sell, say, to engineering or manufacturing. But what are some of the things that if I wanted to say, I want to have a really great presentation to this guy in procurement, what are things that you worry about as a buyer? What are the things that you, the typical questions you want me to answer for you?
Well, the best way to answer that is to give this little advice from the buyer's desk. Before you even meet with the buyer, send the buyer an email a few days in advance with a pre-meeting agenda as to what it is that you're thinking you want to discuss. Because remember, some of the things that you just can't wait to tell the buyer isn't necessarily what they want and need to hear to make a decision on your company, to make a decision whether we're going to ask you to quote or whether we're going to give you the order. If you send a pre-meeting agenda and say, put list down a few of the topics, like for buyers, it would be, you know, I need to know the financial strength of your company. I need to know your generic terms and conditions. I need to know your delivery capabilities. I need to know, you know, your pricing, the products that you've sold to us in the past or sold to our competitors. Not so much technical, but again, some buyers do prefer the technical aspect. It's up to you to find out ahead of time if that's what they want to hear. Send them a premium agenda of some of the things you plan on discussing, and then at the bottom of the email say, please review and let me know of any items you'd like to add or remove for discussion that would help you understand the type of company that we are, so you can make a decision about us. And you know how many people I get to do that to me? Zero. None. And this is what, based on my conversations with buyers, this is what they want.
They're starting, you know, by doing the wrong thing, just by not
engaging. They're guessing, yeah. They're walking in and they're sitting down in front of me and just kind of guessing what I might want to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Kind of tied to that is, you know, if say I'm a new supplier to you, and you know, say if we take kind of your current role or past roles where you've been looking at I guess parts that go into drivetrains, how do you evaluate? You're not evaluating my product and my functionality necessarily. You know, manufacturing or engineering is doing that. How do you evaluate me and my company and whether we're a good vendor for you?
That's a good question. And, you know, Dave, let's think about our own private lives. When you're buying products or services from a company, what is it you expect out of them? The bottom line is we want the best product for the best value. And I didn't say best price. I said best value that best fits our needs. We have to make sure also, let me put it this way. Buyers, our main goal is to protect the company financially and legally. That's our main goal. So we want to make sure suppliers have a proven track record of success. I don't want someone just to sit there and say, we offer good pricing and good services and good products. Prove it to me. Show me some documentation. I need to make sure you have a proven track record of success in technology and quality and delivery. I want to make sure that you can comprehend our specifications and our requirements, understand what it is that we need. I want to make sure you have a strong financial balance sheet. And by all means, if the sales manager has no issue, please bring that along. That would greatly help. And we want to make sure that we're working with a sales representative who can communicate clearly, who can be down to earth, and someone who is honest, professional, someone who is responsive. Someone who says or does what they say they're going to do. If they say, Chris, I'm going to get you a quote by 4 o'clock today, and 4 o'clock comes around, 4:30, 5 o'clock, no quote. I can now trust that that supplier is not going to provide what it is that I need in the future. So do what you're going to say and say what you're going to do.
Yeah, so while some of us might say, you know, as insignificant as it might be to be an hour or a day late in providing that quote when we've set the expectation, you know, that what you're doing is you're really evaluating not only that, but that as an indicator of our future performance and whether we're a dependable supplier.
Absolutely. And you know, it may not sound fair, but we will judge an entire company. This is a little secret. I shouldn't be telling you this, but we will judge an entire company based on one person, based on one representative. And if that representative is dishonest, if he doesn't follow through, if he doesn't do what he says he's going to do, we're going to perceive that's what the whole company is like. Now, that doesn't sound fair, does it?
So that's exactly it. If I'm a salesperson and I don't do these agendas up front, I don't talk about what you want to talk about, I don't meet my commitments, however simple they might be to you, you know, in terms of meeting a deadline or providing you a reference or providing you a contract or something like that, those little, what may seem to be little teensy tiny things are things that you're evaluating our whole company and our ability to support you.
And I'm also being evaluated, because if my boss says to me, when's that quote coming in? It's going to come in at 4 o'clock. It doesn't come in. Guess who looks like the idiot now? I do. There's a reason why it's a reason why we're asking for things. How many times have you been in a retail store and you're standing behind the counter and you can't get someone's attention, or you have some bad experience with one of the sales reps? You leave that store and you say, I'm never shopping here again. Because of that one experience with that one person, it's the same for corporate purchasing.
Yep. You mentioned something just a moment ago, and let me jump to it. And excuse me, kind of for jumping around. I feel like I'm Columbo interrogating you, Chris. But I know there's a lot of questions we have on our minds about how to work with you. How are buyers evaluated? How are you measured? If I'm a salesperson and I want to make you successful, how do I make your boss say that you've done a great job?
That's a good question. And you know what? I wish salespeople would ask me that. The salespeople I deal with now, I wish they would ask. If they understood our goals as an individual, as a department, as a company, and show support in me achieving those goals. We have cost savings goals, of course. We have some companies have minority sourcing goals. We have supplier reduction goals. Unfortunately, we determined that if we get rid of suppliers, then that can somehow save us money, especially poor performing suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
We have global sourcing goals. You know, every company, every department is a little bit different as to what kind of goals that they need to reach. Cost savings, obviously, we're measured against, you know, project budgets and how well we did with the budgets, how well we even get somewhat performed on how the equipment performs. If we purchased a piece of junk, that's going to come back to us too, because we didn't do our homework or involve the right people to make sure that the products and services we're buying is actually going to work out there in the field.
Okay, so your obligation goes beyond the transaction into actually, are they delivering on it?
You know, and really there are three types of buyers, and you need to do your homework to find out what kind of buyer you're dealing with. The first kind of buyer is the buyer that just places orders. He's just directed by someone, here, we're going to place your order to this guy, go ahead and place the purchase order and send it to him. The second type of buyer is the buyer who is responsible for sending out requests for quotes. They do comparisons. They're somewhat involved in a supplier selection process, and then they place the order, and then that's about it. If there's a commercial item that needs to be resolved, they get involved with that. And then there's the third kind. The third kind is the kind that the buyers in my organizations, in all three companies, have been compelled to be. We're a cradle-to-grave buyer. We get involved in project budgets. We send out the RFQs. We visit suppliers. We work with quality and engineering and the end users. We work with finance. We work with accounts payable. We are constantly working with the suppliers. We place the orders. We do the cost commercial comparisons. And when, even when the product is out there in the field, if there's a problem with it, the end user comes to us and we contact the supplier and we try to come up with a resolution. So you need to determine what kind of buyer you're dealing with and then ask them what are their roles and responsibilities. Buyers would be more than happy to talk to you about it. They love to talk about themselves.
Well, see, I was going to ask you that question is, you know, if I come to you and say, Chris, you know, can you tell me, you know, what your responsibilities are and what kind of buyer you are, and can you tell me how you're measured and evaluated? You wouldn't consider that too direct and too offensive. I might phrase it a little bit better, but you wouldn't consider that too intrusive or too pushy as a salesperson?
No, even say that. Just, you know, Dave, I would just say, you know, I'm really interested in how buyers are, you know, you don't even have to ask them. You could just say buyers in general. Could you tell me how buyers in general are evaluated or what are their roles and responsibilities? They'd be more than happy to talk to you generically about it. If they want to offer some personal information, then that would certainly be up to them. It's a great thing to do, Dave. It's a great idea, and no one does it.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time, but we really, as salespeople, fail on the execution side of it. And when I hear you say it, you know, it's you know, it's kind of, you know, one of these, I slap my palm against my forehead and say, duh, it's so simple and so obvious, but we don't do it.
You know, a lot of this is really common sense. I mean, we think it's sales one, we think it's common sense, but if I'm telling you, if you spent 2 weeks sitting behind the buyer's desk, you would find out how uncommon it is. I don't know if people just take things for granted, or if they're afraid to ask questions, or what the issue is. But common sense is not all that common out there. Of all the thousands of sales reps that I've worked with, there are a handful, literally a handful, that I still remember them. I still remember their first name and last name. I remember what they sold to me, and I remember how professional they were, how down to earth. They, you know, they weren't trying to be my best friend, but they were looking out for my best interest.
Yeah.
And that's what buyers want.
That's really fair. Let me, my good friend in Ireland, John O'Gorman, has asked an interesting question, and this might be a little bit more specific to company, but in general, what percentage of suppliers tend to fit into kind of a strategic category with companies? Do you have any thoughts or guidelines? There's some that, you know, you're looking for suppliers with more, you aren't looking for an enduring relationship. You're looking for just more of a transactional and an ease of buying relationship. But there's some suppliers that are kind of critical to your future growth plans and to your success. Are there any kind of guidelines around, you know, what percentage of suppliers are typically considered strategic and what percentage are maybe more kind of transactional?
You know, kind of hard to put a number on that. It would be different with every company and with every department. So I don't know that I can offer a fair answer for that. I can tell you that obviously we might have one supplier that just offers little widgets and little washers and screws and that, but guess what? We place more business to them than anyone. Yeah, maybe their products are small and I can get them from the number of people, but we buy so many quantities from them that they're actually one of our biggest suppliers, so they're very important to us. Important to us in the fact, too, that if they go out of business, look at all the parts now I've got to go out and resource. So the buyers who have the most business, whether it's whether the business is the products are incredibly expensive or if they're you know, pennies on the dollar, but we buy so many of them that they're into the tens of millions of dollars of sales. Those are the ones that we feel are the strategic suppliers. Also the suppliers who can prove to us that their products are the best value, maybe not say the best price, but the best value because no one else, the competitors are low. There aren't many people that make this specific product. Those people are key in strategic sourcing as well.
Okay, let me stop you right there, and because I know, you know, a bunch of people in the audience are just dying to ask this question, and let me kind of maybe call BS on you. Isn't your job really to hammer us for price?
Absolutely, in a story. Good night, everyone. I just put a blog out yesterday, and it has to do with total cost of ownership. There's another blog out there that talks about price versus value. And let me tell you that I know that salespeople, they get frustrated with buyers because they think it's all about the price. It doesn't matter what we're selling them as long as it's the lowest price. Now, back in the olden days, and really not too long ago, price was the only thing that we made decisions by, because we're making money hand over fist. We didn't have a lot of competitors. It didn't matter if our products, you know, were terrible. People would buy them anyway. It didn't matter, and I have to buy a new machine every year because the old ones are breaking down. I had so much money, it didn't matter. Well, now, in the last 5 years, the business environment, the economy has drastically changed. And thank God, at least in the companies I worked at, executive management is starting to wake up. And they're looking at value more than price. Now, let me say that when I sent a request for quote out, let's say to 5 suppliers, and I get the quotes back, if price is the only thing I have to measure by, then I'd be stupid not to buy the lowest price. Let's say, Dave, that you're a buyer, and you went out for a quote with 5 suppliers for pencils. You perceive that there's no difference between the pencils, that they're all exactly the same, they're all quoting to the same specifications. If you perceive that every pencil is the same, then price is the only thing you have to measure by to make a decision. And you'd be crazy not to pick the low bid. But if I was a sales rep and I said, yes, my pencil costs a little bit more, but guess what? Dave, I found out that you need an eraser too. And I know that you have to go out and buy an eraser separate, but my pencil comes with an eraser. And my pencil, yes, costs a few dollars more or a few cents more, but when you do your total cost of ownership over the life of the project and you find out that the price you would have to buy a pencil and buy an eraser separate when I can offer you the same thing for a few pennies more, look at how much money you're going to be saving instead of having to buy both the pencil and eraser separate. Those are the types of things we need to be educated on. You need to educate us on the value of your product and how it fits into our needs.
It's so good to hear you say that, Chris, because that's, you know, a lot of people in the community, what we talk about is you know, it really isn't, you know, when there are no perceived differences, when there are no perceived, there is no perceived differentiation, the only basis to differentiate alternatives is through price. But, you know, if you start changing that, if you start looking at things that are different, that can create real benefit and real value, then you change the whole equation. And it's so good to hear you say that that's how you buy. Let me ask you kind of the nasty question for some of the salespeople out there. How good are salespeople at doing that?
It doesn't happen very often. You know, we always talk about the 80-20 rule. I think it's more like 90-10. And this is not to put down any sales professional, whether you're green or seasoned. I don't find fault in sales professionals who don't approach or use the type of strategies we've been talking about for the last 30 or 40 minutes, because unless you have sat, unless you spend time sitting behind the buyer's desk, you may never even know this. You may never even realize this. So I don't find fault, which is why I'm you know, trying to provide some feedback to help sales professionals improve their opportunities. And again, at the same time, hoping that the buyers they deal with will have an easier job as well. But the percentage is very low.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm glad you're saying that now, because I don't want you to let us off the hook. I mean, all the time in these conversations among salespeople and sales professionals, we keep talking about value. We keep talking about, you know, really differentiating ourselves and developing and delivering compelling value. And you're saying that's what you want a salesperson to come and talk to you about. That's how they're really going to engage you. And to the degree that they can demonstrate, you know, compelling superior value, you're going to buy that. But you're saying we oftentimes do it to ourselves because we don't, you know, walk the talk.
Yeah, you need to educate the buyer. And, you know, 90% of the people will sit there in front of me and say, I offer a great price that I can save you so much money. Well, prove it. Show me. Show me how you can save me money. Show me a drawing of a product that we're buying from someone else. Or show me the product and physically show me, without getting into too much technical detail, what it is that you can do to save us money. And if you can convince me, based on the things that interest me, then I can get you to the end user, to the designer, and you can talk with them, and we'll see where that goes. But you've got to do your homework. That's the second biggest mistake, in my view, that sales professionals make. They don't do their homework. They don't research their competitors. They don't research my company to see what it is that we need or what's coming up. They don't research my department. They don't research me. They don't know what it is that I'm interested in, my goals and my responsibilities and my wants and my needs.
Yeah, and you're a pretty easy guy to research. I mean, on LinkedIn and your blog, you know, I can decode you pretty quickly.
I'm glad you brought up LinkedIn, because that is, you know, networking is really the key. You know, people say I can't get in front of the buyer, I can't get in front of the end user. Use LinkedIn as a great tool. I wish this had been around years ago. You know, networking is it's a combination of sales skills and social skills and business skills. And if you use it consistently and correctly, it will eliminate your need to cold call.
Do you research salespeople that are coming in to visit you? Do you take a look at their LinkedIn profiles and kind of get them calibrated before you even see them?
Yeah, absolutely. I look up once in a while if I don't know the person. I look them up just to see what their background was like, and so that I can kind of expect what kind of a experience that we're going to have. So, yeah, I definitely do that.
If I'm a salesperson that's never done business with you before, with your company, and I'm doing a cold call on you, you and I have kind of offline said, well, you don't respond to cold calls and all that. How do I interest you in having a meeting with me and introducing my company?
Very difficult thing to do. Yeah, well, you know, we talked a little bit before, Dave, about the gatekeeper. In the companies I worked at, it's very difficult to get in front of the buyer. And in one of the blogs I've written, it's called How to Get Access to the Buyer. If you cannot get access to the buyer, if you can't get a buyer to respond to you, then find someone that they will respond to. It could be an end user or eventual end user of your products and services. Could be someone in engineering. It could be one of the other buyers that I work with. It could be someone in your own company that knows me. It could be someone, one of your sub-suppliers or one of your friendly competitors, maybe not necessarily that you guys are downright competitors, but you know another salesperson who knows this guy. And network with that person. Get on LinkedIn and type in the guy's name and see who that person is connected to and try to connect with them. That's definitely worked with me when I've been looking for things or trying to network. That's really the best way to do it. Get the people who know that buyer interested in you and on your products and services based on what interests them and see if they will connect you. Remember that buyers do not have money of their own. They spend other people's money. So the end users, the engineers who have this money, should have a right as to to say who is allowed the quote and who should be receiving the purchase order. It's their money.
And
users will come to me and say, hey, I got a guy here. He might be able to save us some money. He's got a great product. Would you mind meeting with him? And I'd be more than happy to.
Okay. Now there's this kind of thinking on a lot of sales guys' side that, you know, I'm dealing with the end users. Those are the people that I really want to sell to. And they, in fact, try to avoid the buyers until the last moment. And you and I have talked about this a lot before, and that's probably one of the worst strategies that a salesperson can do. You know, they really need to engage the buyer, I think, much earlier in the process. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious why it is a mistake, Dave, not to engage the buyer at least early on somewhere. But as you said, you know, we are the dark side. We're the scary people. No one wants to deal with us. No one wants to talk to us. And we kind of like that, you know, people being somewhat standoffish. But in reality, we do want to become involved early, because we don't want end users coming in and trying to force someone down our throat to buy from. We don't know them. We don't know what kind of pricing they have. We don't know what kind of value they can add to the company. We don't know if their products are even going to work out there in the field. So getting you guys jammed down our throats is not something we want. We want, you know, some sort of an icebreaker. Send an email, send a package. A big tip I can give you is, you know, we get brochures all the time through the mail, and we don't even have to open them up. We know what's in there. Send a FedEx package or send a UPS package. Something where, oh, look, this is interesting. Open it up. At least get a little icebreaker about your company. Get your name out in front of us, so when it is time to meet, oh, yeah, I remember you guys sent me a brochure, and I looked you guys up in the web, and, you know, get a little icebreaker there before we meet.
But I think your point about getting involved early with procurement and not avoiding it till the very last moment, I think there's a real important point there, is that, you know, if we look at aligning with your interests in really creating value for you in the role that you're playing, your job is to manage risk. And, you know, if you have somebody shoved down your throat at the last minute, and all that really puts you in a bad position from your own personal performance point of view in the decisions you have to make. I mean, because of the risk management issues. So if a salesperson really wants to help you out and sell to what your specific needs and interests are, they're going to recognize that you have to do your job. You have to do your due diligence and make sure, you know, not only does the product, you know, feed, speeds, feature, and function, it's something that the end users are all hot and lathered about, but you want to make sure that you're the right supplier and you want the time and the engagement with the salespeople to really make that determination.
Absolutely, and that is that's the future of strategic sourcing and procurement. Because buyers are becoming more involved in supplier selection and getting blamed at times when products don't work, then we have to feel warm and fuzzy about the sales rep. And let's look at the other side of the coin too. I recently wrote a blog talking about prevailing over the incumbent supplier. How do you get that order? How do you knock the other guy out and get yourself in there? You could convince the buyer all day that you're the right guy to source the PO to, but if the end user doesn't want you, I don't want to ram you down their throat, because what are the odds that your products and services are going to work out there in the field? I'm going to get complaints from the end user no matter how well your product is working, and the odds are you're not going to get a chance to quote again. If I force you down their throat when they want their preferred supplier instead, it's going to spell trouble. So you really have to pick your battles. There are some products, some suppliers you may not want to try to kick out because it might be the last business you ever get from that company.
Right. Well, and your job is to keep your end users, you know, who are the, you know, in you know, in engineering or manufacturing or wherever, your job is to, you know, satisfy their requirements and keep them happy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, buyers deal with more than just suppliers. They deal with finance, accounts payable, the end users, management, logistics. There's a lot of people we have to try to keep happy. And if you think of purchasing think of a big wheel and think of purchasing as the hub of the wheel, with all the spokes relying on that hub to do its job so the wheel turns. That's really what purchasing is. And the reason we are that isn't because we're smart or we get paid a ton of money. It's because of the perception that we have control over the suppliers. We hold the hammer over the supplier's head, so we can get things done. So everyone comes to us when there's a problem with the supplier, if it's accounts payable, if it's, again, the end user, if it's maintenance, if it's logistics. Everyone wants a piece of our time to help put their fires out with the suppliers.
But yeah, and also I think kind of a different twist on that is that, you know, the types of decisions that you have to make impact all parts of the company, just not the person who's going to be using it, but it impacts all parts of the company, whether it's finance, legal, IT, you know, all those sorts of things. So you have to kind of align the interests of and represent the interests of various parts of the company, and so it's a fairly rich kind of capability. You know,
you're
the other thing too is one of the reasons I want to make you my buddy is if I want to get access to those people, you know, coming, you know, through you, being introduced by you really makes my job easier.
Oh, absolutely. You know, just as if an engineer or end user is impressed with someone technically, they want to introduce them to me. If I'm impressed with your company commercially, I in turn want to introduce you to them. And they, you know, we work together. We're not you and I, but I mean the end users and I and the engineers, we all work together. We all know each other. And we know that we wouldn't recommend someone that we didn't think would be able to perform. So, absolutely. It goes back to networking again.
Yeah, that may be a bit of a misperception we as sales have. I mean, so much of the time I hear that, you know, people say, well, the buyers are just gatekeepers. They're not going to let us in and talk to the people that we'd really like to talk to. You know, and you're telling me that that's really not the case. But
well,
we probably have to earn the right to get access.
Again, it's the case. And let's go back to our discussion regarding the number one sales mistake, which is the sales presentation. If you can't sell to me based on my wants and needs, then I'm not going to show any interest, and I'm not going to let you pass that gate. But if you sell to me based on my goals and my responsibilities, find out what those are, sell to me based on that, get me interested, then I can be more than happy to introduce you to the other members of the team.
You've just broken, you know, given us the secret decoder ring, because, I mean, again, it's so obvious is, you know, and I've seen the pitches before. The salespeople go in and they sell to, you know, maybe the engineer's wants and needs, but they're giving that pitch to you and you don't care. I mean, if they just sold to your wants and needs, you'll introduce them to the engineer and they could give that wants and needs pitch. And it's so simple, but we execute it so poorly.
So many presentations that are, when I was at Chrysler, because I bought capital equipment, the presentation was just filled with pictures of equipment. We were so bored. And I'll tell you a quick story. There was a supplier who wanted to present in front of the entire procurement team, including my manager. And I said, you know what, let me conduct an experiment. Send me your sales presentation. Let me tweak it. So I pulled out all those pictures of the machines, and, you know, I left one in so we know what it is that they can provide us. But I put in, you know, preferred payment terms, minority sourcing goals. I put in little buzzwords that went around the company. I put in their sales, their performance records, all of these commercial types of things we're interested in. They completed their presentation. When they left,
Just interrupt you there a moment. So you built the presentation for the sales team that was really aligned with procurement's interests.
Yes, absolutely. I put in there the things that buyers wanted and needed to hear to make a decision, and not necessarily what the sales professional wanted to tell us. It could be two completely different things. Mm-hmm. And after they presented and they left, I asked the other buyers what they thought, and they said that was the best sales presentation they had ever seen, because it gave them everything they needed to make a decision.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So again, if I just ask you what is it that you're responsible for? What is it that you need to hear from me? If I do my homework up front and understand what people like you are really interested in, you know, if I understand how you're measured and what makes you a success, and I tune all my communication to just hitting on that, I've come close to hitting a home run with you.
Yeah, I would absolutely, because you are going to stand out, because 90% of the people, even 95% of the people, don't do that. And if you do that, you are going to stand out from your competition. Trust me. And you know what, Dave, that reminds me, I think in a future blog coming up in a few days, I'm going to put a list of questions that you should ask buyers and a list of questions that you need to let buyers know, whether it's before the sales meeting or during the meeting. But there are a list of questions you can ask the buyer that, generally speaking, most buyers would be happy to tell you. It's not where you're probing into their personal life or into any confidential information, but information to find out what it is that they need to hear from you in order to make a decision.
Yeah, super. Let me, again, I'm jumping around a little bit, but we've been tossing some terminology around a little bit casually, as if we may all understand it. And, you know, we hear the words purchasing, procurement, and sourcing. Are they different words representing the same thing, or do they represent different things?
Purchasing and procurement is basically the same thing. It's refers to the actual type of department that I work in. Sourcing is that can, depending on what company you're working with, sourcing can mean I placed a purchase order to someone, or I've chosen a supplier, but I haven't placed the order yet. So that has different terminology in different companies. That's a good question.
Okay. And a lot of time I've seen sourcing more associated with kind of the strategic procurements, as opposed to other things that may be very large procurements, but not as strategic or not as risky or important in the general scheme of things. Is that another
true
way of looking at it?
Yeah, I'd say so, yes.
Okay. We've been talking a lot about what we do to really engage you and connect with you, you know, how you're measured, how we should work with you, how you can help us. You know, what are some of the things I should have been asking that I haven't been?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head here. I would say, let me think for a second here. Here's a good one. And this does not happen. This rarely ever happens, in fact. Ask the buyer while you're on the phone with them or anything if there are any new projects on the horizon that you could quote on. It's amazing how many people, you would think, again, Dave, sales 101, it's amazing how many sales reps don't even do this. Is there anything coming up that we can quote on?
So we're so mission focused on this thing that we're there to sell for that we don't ask the open-ended question, are there any other opportunities that I could compete for?
That's exactly right. And not only things you could quote on in the future, but are there any products you're having a problem with now that maybe we could quote on for potential resourcing? That's another one.
Yeah.
Ask the buyer to clarify how they select a supplier. And, you know, again, do it in a way, you've got to do it in a way where you're not, it's not like you're probing or you're, you know, you're just curious, you know, how do buyers, and don't specifically say, you know, you as a buyer or your department, just say, how do buyers, you know, select suppliers to receive requisitions or I should say, request for quotes. How do you select those buyers?
Okay.
ask them what kind of forces, internal or external, could influence the supplier selection process. What, you know, I've got the best price, I got the best product, what else is out there that might inhibit us from getting the order? Ask the buyer what their own definition of a preferred supplier is, or a preferred sales professional, because every buyer is going to give you a different answer. So, you know, keep in mind that some of the things that I'm talking about and things that are my opinion or the opinion of the other buyers I've talked to, the buyer you deal with tomorrow could be completely different. It's up to you to find out what their own definition is.
Yeah. John asks a good question. Don't you get tired of salespeople coming in asking you these same questions all the time?
No, you know why? Because they don't ask them. I get tired of them not asking.
That's such a wonderful point, because, you know, again, at least from my side, where I spend lots of time talking to salespeople about these are the things that you need to do to become, you know, a high-performing sales professional, and you know, people nod their heads in the right direction. But, you know, you're the person sitting on the other side of the desk, and we aren't executing on it. And you're just saying, if we do our job as top sales professionals, we're going to make our jobs and your jobs so much easier.
Here's another great tip, too. Ask the buyer to give you an example of a quote as how he would like to receive it. In other words, so many quotes that I get are confusing. I don't know where the information that I asked for is. I'm adding, you know, numbers up wrong. I really shouldn't be telling you this, but we buyers make mathematical mistakes all the time. And we were constantly dealing with numbers and quotes and comparisons. We make mistakes sometimes. Sometimes the guy who was the low bid supplier, I didn't realize it because I fat fingered something. So ask the buyer if he has an example quote of how or let him tell you how he would prefer to see a quote laid out.
So if we present
it makes it easier for them.
Yeah. Okay.
And no one asks that either.
You know, I mean, as we go through this conversation, it just, you know, one is it really is so pleasing to hear you as a professional buyer to say, you know, these are the things that we expect. These are the things that help you. And it's all about us as salespeople doing our job as sales professionals. And if we do that really well, again, we're going to be more successful because that's what you want us to do.
Sitting behind the buyer's desk, I mean, I've made a lot of friends, sales professionals, and sales is not an easy career. We know that. I mean, we would probably be terrible at it. It's not an easy profession to have. And again, we are still influenced by those successful sales professionals who have secured the order and offered the products and services that we enjoy in our private lives. So I have really a lot of compassion for salespeople. I mean, I deal with them all day long. I have a lot of respect for them. I think it's a very noble profession, and I'm hoping that those that are listening will be able to pick up some tips and some advice. And I hope to get on the blog and read some of the things that are coming off of my chest, things that I think sales professionals could do to improve their opportunities. Because again, if I can help sales professionals see things from the buyer's perspective, it's going to make life so much easier for the buyers that they're dealing with.
Yeah. Well, we have overrun our time, and I want to thank you, Chris. I mean, this has been, at least for me, really one of the most interesting conversations that I've ever had. And I'm looking at the comments, and I think we've covered almost all the questions asked. And I'm looking at the comments. I mean, people are really appreciating this. You and I have to do this more often on different topics because you really have such a great perspective, and you're teaching us so much. For those of you listening, probably Chris has recently started blogging, and it's one of the blogs that I read every single article Chris comes out with, because it is, you know, it is a procurement guy, a sourcing guy, who's giving us the secret decoder ring of how we become more effective in selling to people like him. And
as long as you don't tell the other buyers, because they're all going to get mad at me for giving away their secrets.
So we can't go in and say, Chris Locke told us this, and they'll roll over and say, okay, you've got the order. But no, I'll let you do a commercial announcement. But I, you know, Chris's blog is really one of the most thoughtful and best blogs. It is absolutely, from my point of view, mandatory reading for any sales professional. You want to give him the URL again, Chris?
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's again, thebuyersdesk.com. I started blogging last month, so there's a number of articles in there already. But it's all one word, spelled THEBUYERSDESK, thebuyersdesk.com. And if you have any questions, by the way, there is a tab in there. It gives my email address. If you have any questions regarding the procurement process, please feel free to email me, and I'll try to get to you as soon as I can.
Well, great. Well, Chris, thanks so much for being, you know, so open and straightforward with your perspective. It really, again, this has been a huge amount of fun. You and I always tend to have a lot of fun in these conversations. So thanks so much, everybody. Thank you for joining. Thanks. I mean, the comment stream and the questions have been absolutely awesome. For those of you who are kind of new to these events, a recording of this will become available within about 24 hours. You should get email notification. There are questions, the questions on here. I'll be going in and trying to respond to some of these. Chris will be trying to respond to some of these, and you know, many of our participants will be presenting their points of view. So let's kind of continue the conversation. And Chris and I and maybe some of his peers will be back at a future date with some more insights from kind of behind the buyer's desk. So again, thanks so much, Chris, and thank you, everyone, for joining us. It's been a great session. Take care.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.